I'm Colin Bailey, the Associate Director and Peter J. Sharp, Chief Curator at the Frick Collection, and I'm the co-curator of the exhibition Masterpieces of European Painting from Dulwich Picture Gallery, which is on at the Frick from March the 9th until May the 30th, 2010.
And I'm Xavier Salomon, Di Arturo and Holly Melosi, Chief Curator at Dulwich Picture Gallery and co-curator of the show.
And Xavier and I worked together over some years to determine which pictures we should borrow and also to introduce our audiences in New York to one of the marvels of London, which is the Dulwich Picture Gallery.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Dulwich is the oldest public art gallery in England. It was founded in 1811, so it's a very exciting time for us as we're building up to a bicentenary next year. And it's great for a New York audience to be able to see nine of our greatest pictures together here at the Frick.
The Dulwich Picture Collection, in a way, represents a grand English 18th century Regency gallery, and it was a collection brought together initially for the King of Poland, so it's a royal collection that never quite made it. Can you tell us a little bit about how it then developed at Dulwich itself?
It's a strange beginning for a collection, because you have to think of two foreigners, a Frenchman and a Swiss-French, who grew up in London, but they both spent most of their lives in London, collecting for Poland and then leaving their pictures to an English boys' school, a college, Dulwich College. And the foundation date is 1811, but it actually opened to the public between sort of 1815 and 1817. And since then, it's grown immensely. I mean, the original bequest is about half of the collection. There's been subsequent gifts in different dates. Most of our Gainsboroughs, for example, come from a bequest in the 1830s. So the collection has expanded, but at the same time, it's retained its Regency feel to it. And the idea is that if you come to Dulwich today, you still walk back in time in a way and see a collection as it would have been in the Regency in the early 19th century.
And in some ways, there's a parallel because, of course, at the Frick, we've added the many rooms to the house in 1935. We added again in the 70s. We do exhibitions downstairs in our exhibition galleries. But in fact, most people coming feel they're stepping back into a Gilded Age mansion circa 1915. And we don't do very much to dispel that, even though the place has grown considerably. The pictures from Dulwich look very much at home here. But some of them, of course, would never have been chosen by Mr. Frick.
Yes, I think it's a very interesting dialogue. And as we both sort of put the pictures up over the last couple of days, that there are certain surprising factors, and there are a lot of dialogues with pictures from the collection. And I think, you know, the Gainsborough Great Portrait of the Linley Sisters is very much a home at the Frick, and if you think of all the great full lengths in the dining room. In the same way, the Rembrandt fits very well with the Rembrandt portrait and the Polish Rider. But there are surprises, and they work on different levels, I think.
I was excited to see how rather more sensuous, erotic Baroque pictures might look in the Frick's overroom, and the space holds the Van Dyck, Samson and Delilah beautifully. You really feel this satiated giant of an Israelite falling asleep in the lap of his beloved as she's about to commit terrible treachery with him. All this a bevy of beautiful nude, sleeping nudes, a very mysterious picture by Sir Peter Lely that has a type of sensuous eroticism that we don't see very much at the Frick.
Yeah. No, I think the Van Dyck especially is, it's interesting to see an artist who's so well represented at the Frick, and yet this is a totally different mode. I mean, all the great Van Dycks at the Frick are portraits, and suddenly you see this great biblical scene. And once you think about it, there are no great biblical scenes at the Frick at all. And, you know, it's a picture which has a religious subject matter, but at the same time it's an incredibly erotic and sort of, you know, very interestingly composed picture, and the sort of juxtaposition between the sort of very pale flesh, female flesh, and the sort of rather brown sort of male flesh, and the sort of naked, half-naked character of both main people in the picture is fascinating. And again, it jumps out as being something quite strange at the Frick, but at the same time, the way it's painted and the type of picture is very much in keeping with other pictures here.
I mean, we obviously, both of us were attentive to range, representation of Dulwich, but also, of course, quality. And to have the great Poussin of The Birth of Jupiter on its own on a wall, a picture that's somewhat smaller in scale than the other large works in the overroom, but which has a sort of crystalline light and clarity to it that is beguiling. And even in a very large room, this picture holds itself very well. In the garden court, we've put four of the smaller works, more cabinet-type pictures, which are very beautifully finished and which you can get up close to less gallery pictures than the ones in the overroom, which is itself interesting because, of course, Dulwich is a gallery. And yet you have many very fine cabinet pictures. So it was so much a taste in 18th century Europe.
I think, you know, there are pictures in the garden court. I mean, all of the pictures in the garden court, in a way, it's as if there is a divide between the oval room and the garden court. And the pictures in the garden court, I mean, Canaletto is not representative of the Frick, so Gerrit Dou is not. But of course, you know, the three great Vermeers speak directly very well to the Gerrit Dou. And in fact, we know that our Gerrit Dou, the Dalwich Gerrit Dou, was copied by Vermeer, and the one at the National Gallery in London is a direct replica of the Dou. So it's quite interesting that way as well. Murillo is another artist, a great Spanish artist. Murillo is not represented at the Frick, and yet he works very well in the company of El Greco and Velázquez and Goya, of course. And the fact that it's just a room away from those great pictures makes perfect sense. And then the great Watteau, which, I mean, considering that one of the great glories of the Frick collection is the French 18th century painting. Dulwich is quite poor in that respect, but we're very lucky because the two or three pictures we do have are outstanding pictures, and Le Plaisir du Bal is really one of the outstanding works by Watteau in England.
The Frick acquired its first Watteau only in 1991, and in effect, a work like The Pleasures of the Dance would never come up again, simply not available again. The Dulwich collection shows us a world of, in some ways, a world of great optimism when old master paintings of the very highest quality were still on the market, still to be acquired. And in that five-year period, Desenfants and Bourgeois did an amazing job in bringing together this work. In a way, it's a little bit like the Getty, perhaps, for more recent art commentators, one institution that is on track to acquire and make a peerless collection. It took the Frick collection a long time to reach that, and it's quite chastening to remember that many of these great collections, like Dulwich, were created 200 years ago, and that you're celebrating 200 years is something quite staggering.
One of the very interesting things about Dulwich, as well, is the fact that even though we have this very long history, we know very little about the prehistory of many of the pictures. And what I find fascinating is that this is a collection effectively built around 5 years. One of the most exciting periods at the end of the 18th century, when, of course, the British market is being flooded with all the pictures coming from France. Of course, this is the French Revolution. And all the great French collectors think of the Duc d'Orléans. And of course, there are great Orléans pictures here at the Frick, and there are some at Dulwich as well. And all of this is coming by London. And of course, the fact that you could acquire those unbelievable masterpieces at that point for relatively good prices, considering, because the market was so flooded with these pictures. So it's sort of the right time, and the fact that these two men are there at the right time, and with the French connections of Desenfants, he managed to buy a lot of things from very key people in France at the time.
What's so interesting to me, though, is that in a country, in England, around 1810, 1811, without a national gallery, with great collections national collections being formed in Europe, initially, these pictures were given to a boys' public school south of the river, with a mouldering collection, as Horace Walpole remembered it, no great distinction yet, but with this sense that a collection of this quality could thrive and be of interest to Londoners. And we know from the 19th century, in your excellent introduction, that visitors came all the time to see pictures in Dulwich. Van Gogh visited the gallery in the 19th century, and that Henry James talks about going down to look at pictures there. And so that it has a very, even after the creation of the National Gallery in London, Dulwich has always had an important role in diffusing great old masters in London.
It is a fascinating episode, in a way, in the history of museology, because, of course, it's worth remembering that most of the great national collections as we conceive them today, the Prado, the Louvre, they're all originally royal collections. Of course, England has a royal collection, which is still a royal collection. It's still a private collection, effectively, and it's still housed in the royal residences. So the National Gallery in London is a different institution, which is founded by the government, by Parliament, about 15 years later than Dulwich. And what is fascinating is, if you go back to the will of Francis Bourgeois when he leaves the pictures to this college, the reasons he does that are very, very interesting. It's for people to inspect the pictures, but he also talks already about pollution. He talks about the fact that the pictures are better off at Dulwich in what is then almost countryside, and it still is today in some ways, rather than the centre of London. And this is something that 15 years later, when the National Gallery is founded, there are great discussions about the pollution, Trafalgar Square, where to house the National Gallery. And they're all very modern concerns, in a way, to do with museums and conservation and the representation, of the display of pictures. And the fact that we encounter these things as early as 1811 is outstanding, really. And the building as well is very much part of this. And I think one of the important things about Dulwich is the relationship between the pictures and the picture gallery, that the actual architecture that houses these pictures.
Just as we've become much more attentive in recent years to the Carrere and Hastings building, we're celebrating our 75th anniversary this year, and we're focusing some attention on John Russell Pope's additions to this, to the Frick, in fact creating a museum from a mansion. So the Soane building for Dulwich is one of the sort of textbook examples of new museology, with top-lit lights, with elegant gallery displays, a model that was used throughout Europe and is still looked to.
Yeah.
So, and I think you've had the gallery has had a renovation and installation quite recently as well.
Yeah, in 2000 we had an extension by Rick Mather, which has added some modern, much-needed space to the gallery. But of course the main building, the Soane building, is still very much an architectural highlight of London, and people, we have architecture students that come to study the building. You cannot conceive many modern museum buildings without Dulwich, if you think of the extension to the National Gallery in London, but to go further away, the Kimball Museum in Fort Worth. Louis Kahn did look at Dulwich for inspiration for that building. The type of space, the top lighting, all of that. I mean, obviously in very different materials, in very different forms. It's also much more simple and practical on a more fun level. Things like the mausoleum at Dulwich, which is an exceptional structure in a way, the fact that our founders are buried on site in near the gallery. The mausoleum itself, which is an extraordinary structure, is the inspiration behind the red phone box in England. Those are directly based on the mausoleum at Dulwich.
And that will date you as well, because those red phone boxes are no longer so well known, or no longer that much used anymore.
We still have a few around.
It's a wonderful collaboration between two institutions that share so many values and interests, and we can't tell you how thrilling it is to have these nine great old masters in the Oval Room and the Garden Court. And I'm sure that while many, many New Yorkers have visited Dulwich, many more will come and visit in the future.
Yes, masterpieces of European paintings from Dulwich Picture Gallery will be on until May the 30th, and it will give a great opportunity to a New York audience to see pictures from a lesser-known institution in England. But in the same way, we're hoping to welcome as many New Yorkers to London in the future, and we know that a very specific New York inhabitant of the Frick Collection will be coming to Dulwich for our bicentenary, when we're going to have Ingres, Comtesse Sonville, for a month for our bicentenary at Dulwich. So it will be a great occasion for a sort of exchange between New York and London. So the Lindley sisters, I'm sure, will feel at home very well for the next 3 months. And in the same way, we're going to have, as guest of honour, the Comtesse for a month.
For more information and a listing of our lectures, programmes around masterpieces of European painting from Dulwich Picture Gallery, visit us at frick.org.